listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host Dave Allen to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It's Monday, March 26th, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hello, Melody, and greetings, listeners.
It's like it was just, I was saying, March 1st. I mean, it's like, where has this month gone? I mean, where has this year gone? It was just like, hey, Happy New Year, everyone. And yes, I talk about, you know, very often I'll mention just how fast time is just screaming by. And it's really, it's fascinating. Fascinating and scary, because that means we're getting another day older. Another day wiser, and for the U.S. government, deeper in debt. Another day deeper in debt. Gold today wasn't in debt. We had a nice pickup today, up $5.30. Currently, the New York spot price after market trading, $13.53. We had a high of $13.56. Silver is up 13 cents today at $16.76. Platinum is up $3 at $955. Palladium is holding at the 980 mark. The USDX today was weaker. Didn't break that, didn't get into 88, but it's holding that 89 level pretty thin, 89.03, down 0.48. Crude oil was down 37 cents today at $65.51. And the stock market, of course, took back all of Friday's losses, basically. The Dow is up 669 points, 24,202. The NASDAQ was up 227 points, 3.25% at 7,220, and the S&P was up 2 2/3, basically at 2,658, up 70 points. 10-year yield 2.84%. Haven't had a lot of action. I think we hit that 2.91 last week. Settled down around between 2.81, 2.82, 2.83, 2.84 is kind of trending right in that area. Euro is 1.25, up 0.80, and still holding 8 at the extreme fear factor. Bitcoin took a dive today, down 8 at 79.26. It really is, you know, it's, I, you know, everybody said it was the tariffs, you know, the talk of trade wars, that the market dropped to the level that it did. And, you know, I'm really not so sure that was, I don't think that was the only factor. We talked a little bit about that on Friday. But there were, we talking about bonds, we had auctions of 2-year treasury notes today, and that was pretty weak. It did push the yields higher across the board, and the 2-year treasury note did rise about 2.5 basis points to 2.287%. And as I mentioned, the 10-year note yield was up 1.9 basis points at 2.845%, and the 30-year bond yield was mostly unchanged at 3.077%. So folks have to remember, bond prices fall when yields rise, and the auction tailed 0.4 basis points, which is you know, a sign that appetites are diminishing among investors. The tail is the gap between the highest yield the Treasury sold in the auction and the highest yield expected when the auction began. The 2-year note yield is sensitive to shifting expectations for monetary policy and has seen, you know, a relentless climb since September and rising expectations for a more aggressive Federal Reserve.
Yeah, on another financial note, Melody, Moody's lead retail analyst didn't sugarcoat his outlook last year regarding retail store closing in 2018. You and I have talked about this, it seems, regularly, as a new major brand announced a closing or two, actually, you know, hundreds in many cases, and layoffs of 1,000 plus employees. But Charlie O'Shea said last year, I think the early part of next year, 2018, will be pretty bad. I think it will be tough. He wasn't wrong. Following about 7,000 total store closures in 2017, a Business Insider analysis projects close to 4,000 more this year. Marketing and data analysis firm Cushman & Wakefield thinks it will be much worse than that. It anticipates more than 12,000 store closings this year as merchants just decide to bow out. Crazy stuff there. You know, a lot of these victims are highly recognizable names that used to be pillars of the shopping world in our bi-weekly trips to the mall. Privately held Toys R Us, the former king of toys, announced recently it will close or sell all of its 800 plus U.S. locations, you know, as it tries to navigate the rough waters of bankruptcy. And even with a possible turnaround in view, Macy's is still pulling the plug on some of its locations. And of course, electronic retailer Best Buy, now under the leadership of turnaround guru Hubert Holey, has stopped the bleeding started by online rival Amazon.com. And even Target has found a way to compete with bigger brick-and-mortar rival Walmart and e-commerce behemoth Amazon at the same time. Now, not all retailers have found ways to survive, much less thrive, in this new world where the internet has not only proven disruptive, but also where consumer preferences have actually shifted. Case in point, according to a Harris Group study, 72% of millennials say they'd rather pay for a memorable experience than purchase actual goods. And more affluent older shoppers are increasingly leaning in that direction. Scary times for retail market, Melody.
Well, it is. And, I'm sorry, but I don't know, maybe millennials have more money than what I think they do. But so I'm not sure what they're striving when they say memorable experience. Socializing. Flashy websites. yeah, because I can't imagine they go to the mall anymore just to be, you know, social and so forth. But I remember when I was in Italy, it was very big. I mean, at night, everybody comes out, they walk, they get dressed up, they walk around, and it's, the old saying in Italy was to see and to be seen. And it's a social event in the evening. Everyone comes out and they walk.
I hear that. I know our adolescence was based on almost nightly trips to the local malls. Mm-hmm. Get your homework done, meet you at the mall at 7:30, stay there till closing, walk around, have a good time, drink a soda, have a soft pretzel. Mm-hmm. Boy, life was good, even if you didn't buy anything.
That's very true. And something interesting happened today. I'm not quite sure if it really means anything or if it's just going along with the rest of the world. But today, President Trump ordered 60 Russian diplomats that the U.S. considers spies to leave the country and closed Russia's consulate in Seattle in response to the nerve agent attack on a former Russian spy in the UK, as European allies and Canada took similar measures. And it's it is the largest such expulsion in U.S. history. Worldwide, more than 100 Russian diplomats were sent home. This is all to punish Putin for the UK attack. European Union nations on Monday expelled 30 people. Ukraine ordered 13 Russians to leave. Canada expelled 7. The expulsions are the most aggressive in U.S. Move against Russia under Trump. We all know that President Trump is trying to get a closer personal relationship with Putin, while at the same time introducing new sanctions against people and entities that had ties to the Kremlin. The European Union or the European Council President Donald Tusk, said that 14 EU countries would expel Russia diplomats, and those announcements came in rapid succession from France, Germany, Latvia, and Estonia. U.S. officials called the March 4th poisoning of Skripal and his daughter in Salisbury, England, an attack on America's closest ally and a reckless attempt to murder a British citizen on British soil. More than 100 people were affected by the attack, which employed a class of nerve agent manufactured by the Soviet Union called Novichok, if I'm pronouncing that properly. I'm not sure that I am. Does that mean 100 people were affected by the gas as an after effect?
Yeah, I believe they're saying those were the people who were in proximity to the two that were sprayed. And, you know, it's an airborne agent. And, the doctor or some of the medical staff, I believe I remember correctly, who attended to them were also initially seriously affected. But, yes.
You know, last night it was interesting. We also know that, was it North Korea's half-brother was murdered with something sprayed in his face or wiped in his face as a prank. And it was interesting. Last night I was watching it. I was bored last night. I didn't really feel like watching the complete interview of Stormy. So I was flipping the station, and there was a program
on called... Much Ado About Nothing, I'm afraid.
And I was, it was a program called Deception, and that was their storyline was somebody was murdered by just squirting water, in their face as a prank. You know, the person doing it thought it was a prank, much like the North Korean half-brother was killed. People thought it was a prank. And I'm thinking to myself, if somebody, that's really dangerous. You're out walking around and something. Anything nasty like that could, it's we really do live in a scary world. It's not going to keep me from going anywhere, but you have no defense against that. It's just, just sitting there having lunch, and the next thing you know, you're history.
But, even these targeted assaults, murders, if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, an innocent bystander, too close for comfort, sorry. Jack and Jill. Yeah, you're out of here.
Collateral damage.
Oh, my gosh. It's you're right. It is. It's scary.
But it is common for countries to station intelligence agents overseas undercover as diplomats whose presence at embassies is accepted with a wink and a nod by their host nations, which, I can't ever figure that one out. But Putin held back from immediate response, a decision praised as very smart by Trump, who campaigned on a pledge of improved relations with Putin. And we know that the last administration, he expelled diplomats I can't even recall what the reasons were, and shut down some of their housing, so don't know what it all means. If this is just, we'll show everybody that we're serious about this. I can't imagine what it would mean.
Good for NATO buddy relations for sure. I'm sure it gives Theresa May and Angela Merkel and their peers in Europe some degree of relief that we're tagging along on this particular response. I found it real interesting. Today, after first hearing about this the expulsion that Putin took to Twitter to ask Twitter users for ideas on how they can retaliate against the U.S. for expelling 60 diplomats today. What do I see? What U.S. consulate general would you close if it was up to you to decide? That was asked by the official Twitter handle for Russia's embassy in the United States. I mean, it's pretty pretty amazing. Included in the tweet was an interactive poll asking users to select whether they would shutter the U.S. consulates in Vladivostok, Yekaterinburg, or St. Petersburg. Now, as of 1 o'clock Eastern time this afternoon, the poll accumulated more than 11,600 votes, with the St. Petersburg consulate boasting a 45% plurality of the total. Now, that'll be interesting to see if that's the real response. There are three U.S. consulates in Russia in addition to the U.S. embassy in Moscow.
Well, you know, it's one. I wonder if it's kind of interesting to see. I mean, because I would think that their Twitters and so forth, or that was Facebook, you said, or somewhat controlled. That was Twitter. That is somewhat controlled. So he's kind of doing what Trump is doing with his tweets. He's using it to gather his base. I don't know. You know, I mean, but it's kind of odd to think that, you know, Putin's sitting there, the government's sitting there, and, you know, doing polls to see which ones that, you know, it's almost something like lighthearted, that it's not serious and it's no big deal, and we're going to ask the people which ones that we should close, and I don't
know. Well, you know, it's hard to know what's going through his head. I mean, after his so-called overwhelming re-election victory, where he gained over, what, 70, around 75% of the vote, wink, wink, maybe this is a bone he thinks he's throwing, you know, his those who actually came out to vote for him. But
I don't know, it's a
quirky way of doing foreign policy for one of the major superpowers of the world.
Yeah. Well, when we come back from break, we'll be heading into break here in just a few months. Folks, it's Monday. We're going to talk a little bit about the U.S. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin. He was interviewed by Fox News, and he's optimistic a trade agreement will eventually be negotiated with China. And Jim Cramer said, I'm not a fan of Jim Cramer, but he said some interesting comments about China that, you know, we're just not quick enough or smart enough to deal with China. But China's prepared, and we're not. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. We'll be back in just a few short minutes.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. Time is going by so quick. Even the breaks are going by so quick. Anyway. Jeez,
can't even have a meaningful off-mic conversation anymore.
I tell you. But so, which we always do during the breaks. And so... 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, and visit our website and sign up for our weekly newsletter. Please do so. And let's go ahead and continue with, you know, I mentioned we'd talk a little bit about Steve Mnuchin. I'm not even, you know, he's obviously an intelligent guy, but he certainly doesn't come off that way. When you hear
a tad aloof.
Yes, I mean, it's just like, you know, and I still picture his photo op with his wife.
Unfortunately, he's got to get a new pair of glasses.
Yeah.
They just present an unfortunate first impression.
And not talk, but I can still remember him with his picture, the picture of the dollar bills, his first sheet of dollar bills with his signature on it, and she's somewhat of a trophy wife, I would have to say, for Mnuchin, and he's there with his giddy little look on his face with the dollar bills, and probably every Treasury Secretary has probably done that. It's just they decided to show Mnuchin's. You know, because of the timing of, you know, the administration.
We're going to Paris on the taxpayer's dime. That's worthy of a great big smile.
I know it. But anyway, what else is new? They spent $15 million for a hush fund that nobody has even bothers to talk about or even bothers to find out where that money, which politicians use that money. So it's just another day, just another day. But Mnuchin told Fox News he was optimistic that a trade agreement would eventually be negotiated. China responded to Trump's tariffs with a proposed target list of 128 U.S. products. We talked a little bit about this on Friday.
Yes.
And I don't think we have the whole list yet, or if that whole list was released. And that's what Jim Cramer was saying. They said China was ready. He says they're ready for everything that the U.S. does. He says you're not going to be able to fool the U.S. Now, his relationship, Jim Cramer's relationship with Larry Kudlow, you know, is not so good. So I don't know if he was kind of maybe teasing Kudlow because, you know, Kudlow is a big tariffs man and so forth. But so I don't know, but it was interesting, his comments in relationship to that. But the
quite plausible.
Yeah. But they were ready. They were ready. I mean, even we had to play around to you know, see which countries could you know, bail out of the tariffs and so forth, given the right excuses and everything. But
are there any still in it now other than China?
Yeah, there's a few.
Yeah.
There is a few, but and I'm not sure it was what $50 billion impact on China.
Yeah.
That's really not gonna. I don't think it's going to, you know,
move the needle.
Move the needle much. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the U.S. did ask China in a letter last week to cut a tariff on U.S. autos, buy more U.S.-made semiconductors, and give the U.S. firms greater access to the Chinese financial sector. Mnuchin and trade agreement Robert Lighthizer listed steps they want China to take in a letter to a newly appointed vice premier who oversees China's economy. it was reported that Mnuchin was considering a visit to Beijing. And despite a steady stream of rhetoric from Chinese state media lambasting the United States for being a bully and warning of retaliation, Chinese and U.S. officials, they are busy negotiating behind the scenes. And, I mean, I do believe that. We're not privy. We're not privy to what's going on behind the scenes. And so I'm sure, I'm not sure who's winning or who's losing or if anyone's winning and, or if they're...
Well, if it's a quality negotiation, I suspect both sides will come out a little happy and a little dissatisfied.
Yeah.
I think generally the fact that two adversaries are talking is usually a good thing. I found it interesting getting below the surface on some of this. I'm sorry, I'm losing my what the term is, the intellectual property theft. China has been accused of stealing U.S. technology through unfair requirements to do business in their economy. Kevin Hassett, who's Trump's, I think he's the chair of the Council on Economic Advisors, was trying to explain the details behind last week's announcement to levy up to these $60 billion in tariffs on Chinese imports. He was arguing that China's trade practices involves stealing American companies' intellectual properties. And the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative refers to the bulk of this so-called stealing as forcing joint venture requirements, in addition to foreign investment restrictions and administrative review and licensing processes to force or pressure technology transfers from American companies, who otherwise, obviously wouldn't let these proprietary trade secrets, open to, potential political and military adversary. Hassett used this hypothetical example to make the point. I think it clears the picture. If companies were selling their coffee in China, then China would say, sure, you have access to our market, but we have to set up a joint venture with a Chinese partner. So then every $100 in sales, it's $50 to us and $50 to the partner. To which I'm sure most, especially first-time American businesses, go, say what? Hey, you want to do business? Here are our terms. The Chinese premier said today that China would no longer force foreign firms to transfer technology and would strengthen intellectual property rights. So I suspect that those two, among other issues, will be the topics of negotiation between U.S. and Chinese officials.
Well, yeah, I'm overlooking something, I'm sure, but I look at it this way: if multinational corporations want to do business in China, and China says, "Well, in order for you to do business here, this is what we do," and it's up to the multinational corporations to say yay or nay. If they say okay, we'll do what you want us to do, here's the blah blah blah, blah. Where is it that the U.S. should come and say stop that? Why are we, who is the U.S.? Should they be going after the multinational corporations, or should they be going after China to get to stop the technology? And
or some would argue,
what am I missing?
Tit for tat. Unfortunately, I don't know our own practices in that regard. I mean, if we don't require that of Chinese companies seeking to do business here, perhaps that's one of the solutions. I'm not advocating that. I'm just saying, if they do it, shouldn't we? I think there's some significant ethical considerations. However, and if we're not currently doing it, let's not go down that road, and instead, take the Chinese premier up in his offer to, for them to stop it as well.
But I mean, in the past, I mean, they had an option. How bad, if they really wanted to do business in China, I don't know, man.
Well, you're right.
It's not like they were doing it secretively. Mm-hmm. It's not like they were in there hacking once they got in there, and they went in and they hacked their secrets and their technology and was doing something illegal. I mean, it was pretty up and straightforward. I mean, just...
Yeah, stealing technology is probably, you know, an inaccurate term or a misleading term in any event.
Yeah,
I mean,
so
certainly it sounds like they're putting the tight squeeze on these companies. But again,
China
it's a cost.
Does China have the right to do that?
Well, presumably so. It's the cost of doing business, they would argue. I would argue if I were them.
Yeah. I'm certainly not supporting China because, you know, I'm not sure the strength of that argument, and I don't know what the big deal is. I mean, China stole the big stuff, the big technology back in the 90s, you know, the military secrets and defense secrets and so forth. That was the big stuff. You know, this is, you know, computers and hacking and so forth. But, you know, anyway. You know, so if you guys want to send me a note on that and help us out, send us a note at discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. You know, we've seen gold have a terrific year. We had a terrific week last week, and you know, many project that we'll be seeing 1,400 plus. By the end of the year, I concur with that. I think we're going to have a great year. Gold has been doing very well. I was very pleased not to see it break 1,300 this last time that we've had this downward pressure on gold, and it responded quite nicely and very quickly right after the rate increase that Jerome Powell announced last week. And it's always interesting when you have the elite banks, the traders like Goldman Sachs, come out and say they're bullish on gold. Now, sometimes I hate to report these stories because after report it, then gold goes down. But we're going to do it anyway. So there was an analyst at the Goldman Sachs who came out and said for the first time in more than 5 years that they are very, very bullish on gold. They look at the upward tick in inflation and the increased risk of a stock market correction, and said both should prove to be very supportive for gold bullion. Based on empirical data for the past 6 tightening cycles, gold has outperformed most rate hikes 4 times. This was the same report that I mentioned this several times with this program, and in fact I went into details. Each time we had major rate hikes, gold has gone up. The Federal Reserve approved the quarter point rate, as I said last week, which we're holding at 1.75%. People are impressed with Jerome Powell as he held his press conference for the first time as chairman of the Federal Reserve. The markets like what he does, I believe. But Goldman Sachs has forecasted 4 interest rate increases this year. An analyst at the bank admitted its upbeat gold projections might then seem counterintuitive. It pointed to data from past tightening cycles as a reason to be optimistic. So, and gold really did. I'll have to find my report on that. In fact, I was trying to find the report prior to today's program, where I had the percentage gains based on the rate hikes, and gold did some tremendous gains during those 4 major rate hikes that we've seen in the past. So,
interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. Very interesting stuff. You know, another interesting story coming out of India, Melody, is that Indians hold a relatively low percentage of their total wealth in financial assets, stocks, bonds, what have you. But that trend might be changing, according to a Credit Suisse survey. The investment bank has released its latest version of an emerging consumer survey that interviewed more than 14,000 people across 8 emerging economies, including India, China, and Indonesia. The survey assesses the overall mood of consumers in those markets and looks at their spending pattern, savings behavior, and brand preferences, among other things. Those countries the study said had an aggregate population of close to 4 billion people and represent total consumption of over $9 trillion. The distinguishing feature about India is that the wealth that exists there, of it, only 15% of it's in financial assets, that according to Credit Suisse. In comparison, the Chinese put about 40% plus of their wealth in financial assets, while in the U.S., it's about 70%. Yeah, Indian respondents in the survey selected bank accounts as the most common method for saving their income, followed by life insurance, gold, and property, and finally stocks and mutual funds. But according to the survey, the percentage of households that said they were saving through gold and property was 31%, apparently its lowest level since the survey began 8 years ago. And at the same time, the likelihood of households investing in stocks and mutual funds is on the rise, about 13% in 2010 to roughly 19% last year. That's fascinating. I mean, that some might view that as somewhat bad news for gold in terms of the overall, you know, global demand. But I don't think so. I think that's probably just a natural trend, in my view, of, you know, a ever-developing country such as India with the huge population it has. And plus, there's been incredible growth of U.S. and other multinational corporations in its country. They've been on somewhat of a building boom there over the last 7 to 10 years. So it just could be a matter of just more opportunity for Indians to invest their money in. Now, having said that, you know, that to the extent that, you know, their interests now are being driven toward these paper investments, that's just more available for particularly individual investors in the U.S. Overall, we see that demand is still strong for gold. It's the supply overall that appears to be dropping. So interesting there. I just again, I view that as an opportunity rather than as anything negative for U.S. buyers of gold and silver.
Alrighty, we'll be right back right after these few short messages. Thank you for joining us.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. It's kind of laid back Monday today. It was such an emotional roller coaster last week, an exciting roller coaster. And so today it's like, you know, everything is just a little more calm and a little bit quiet and a little bit laid back. Although all the problems that are facing us, we should be anything but laid back when it comes to your investments. You need to be proactive. You have to make these decisions and protect what you have. Because we're just going to, the dollar is going to continue to lose. And, you know, we're going to talk about this. I'm going to get going so we don't run out of time, because we want to talk about China and their oil contracts started today and so forth, their futures contracts on oil. And there are so many views and opinions on what is going to happen, and it's really important not to make investment decisions based on the opinions that you hear. You know, God bless, I had this morning a conversation, and I guess there's talk about buying into the China's currency as it strengthens with its newfound role of, and it's like, no, ladies and gentlemen, just be very careful. You only want to play with the currency market if you got disposable income. Disposable income is money you can lose. All right, if you can't lose it, you don't play it. Currency trading is one of the highest risk investments you can get involved in. What did Bob Chapman tell me? 95% are losers. You lose when it comes to currency trading. You've got, those are the big players, unless you're George Soros and can set up the country so their dollar collapses that you can short. You know, that's one thing. But most of you are not George Soros's that have enough money to influence a country's currency and make a bet on it. Risky. And so again, if you have money you can afford to lose, go play and have some fun. See what you can make. But if it's your savings, be very, it's, again, I'm not a financial planner, but I do have an opinion, and I know how these markets work. And you've got big bucks that can change. You got central banks playing with currencies. You've got these huge billions and billions of dollars. There's more trades done in currency trading in the Forex than any other market. Highly risky. And so when you have that risk, yeah, you can do very well. But most people don't. 95% of the people don't. So, you know, when you hear people talking about China and their futures and it's being backed by their currency and it's a pitch to get you into the Forex, be very careful. Be very, very careful. Everybody, and I've heard the pitch before, you're not going to lose money. You're not going to lose money. You know, we only place bets when we know we're going to make money. And I just have to, you know, people fall for it, though, because these guys are very convincing. This is why your CEO bonuses have returned to their 2008 level. The average Wall Street worker is back to heights not seen before the financial crisis. Last year, the average bonus jumped 17% to an estimated $184,000, and that's the most since 2006. The total Wall Street bonus pool was $31 billion. And they say, thank you very much. The comptroller's annual report said bonuses for 2017 likely got a boost from tax law changes that will eliminate the corporate deduction for performance-based pay starting in 2018. The change encouraged firms to move up payments to December 2017. So those are the ones who really got the benefits of tax reform.
Yeah, buddy.
You know, not the family on Main Street who got the $100 a month. Anyway, it's you know, it just kind of puts things into perspective on why these who the tax forms really benefited. But Wall Street accounted for less than 5% of local jobs, but 20% of private sector wages in the city. Wall Street had 176,000 workers last year, down from 188 in 2018. You also had profits. They did rise also 42%, and that's the most since 2010.
Wow. To be them. Yeah, well, speaking of bad behavior, New York Fed President William Dudley said earlier today that banks need to stop rewarding the kind of bad behavior that led to the Wells Fargo fake account scandals and other banking misdeeds.
It's amazing they have to even be,
I know,
warned.
Yeah. You know, with Congress pushing through some rollbacks to the Dodd-Frank reforms passed after the Great Recession, you know, Dudley said the lessons from the failure of the banking system shouldn't be ignored, the systemic failure, that is. You know, while acknowledging some need for fine-tuning in the regulations, he pushed for several other changes to make sure the mistakes of the past aren't repeated. He cited several high-profile bank scandals, which we just mentioned, the Wells Fargo case, you know, where employees trying to meet sales goals created 3.5 million fake accounts, trader manipulation of the London Interbank Offered Rate. That's an overnight rate, an overnight fee that banks charge each other to borrow, which we talked about a couple of months ago, and which we'll have an update on in the next week or two on this show, and certainly manipulation in the Forex market. You know, in each of those three cases, financial incentives drove bank employees to cheat. And Dudley proposed the changes to combat the way bad behavior is awarded. And I really like some of these. This one in particular, making managers, not shareholders, more personally liable for fines and other legal liabilities incurred through violations. That's in fact when there actually are fines that result from these misdeeds. And also changing compensation structure away from cash and deferred stock grants to reward performance, not focused just on the short term. He wants to keep a database of what he calls rolling bad apples. Those are violators who move from one firm to the other, particularly those unbeknownst to their employers. And there are others as well. Now, primarily the changes he's suggesting are focused at making regulations easier and less costly for community and regional banks, although critics do worry that the changes will make the system less stable. As things stand now, Dudley said the banking system has improved greatly since the crisis days. Now, interestingly, maybe coincidentally, maybe not, Dudley is in the final months of his position atop the New York Fed. He announced previously that he will retire this summer, and a search committee is continuing to seek his replacement. I think Melody has some more on that.
Well, we're kind of getting a little out of time, and I was hoping that we could go ahead and get into the with China rolling out its yuan-based oil futures contract, because I think the listeners want to, because there's so much misinformation, and there's a lot that we really don't know how it's going to play out, and this is something that China has been working on for a quarter of a century. And finally, this morning, 9 a.m. local time, crude crude contracts began trading on the Shanghai International Energy Exchange. Futures for September settlement opened at 440 yuan a barrel, up from a reference point of 416. As we told listeners on Friday, China is the world's biggest oil buyer, is offering the yuan-denominated futures that foreigners can buy and sell, and it's a first in Chinese commodities. Among the most intriguing questions is whether the traditional benchmark of Brent crude in London and West Texas Intermediate in New York will face a serious challenge. Why is this important for China?
Well, futures trading would, take away some control over pricing from the current international benchmarks, which are based, as we know, on dollars. And denominating oil contracts in yuan would promote the use of China's currency in global trade. And that's one of the country's, particularly President Xi Jinping's, key long-term goals. And China would certainly benefit from having a benchmark that reflects, the grades of oil that are mostly consumed by their local refineries and differ from those, that underpin Western contracts.
Why now?
Well, the push for oil futures, first started to gain steam last year when China surpassed the U.S. as the world's biggest crude importer, reaching a record high in January. That's really the primary reason, although, as you mentioned, this is something idea conceived, almost a quarter of a century ago. China actually introduced domestic crude futures in 1993, only to stop them a year later because of volatility. In recent years, it repeatedly delayed its new contract, among turmoil in equities, in its equities and financial markets. And, those destabilizing moves often prompted China's government to intervene in markets in one way or another. And that scared off a potential, actually a large potential of international participants.
Will foreigners buy in?
Well, that remains to be seen. Almost certainly some will. Overseas oil producers and traders would have to swallow not just China's, tendency to get involved in its markets, but also, China's capital controls. Restrictions on moving money in and out of the country have been tightened in the past couple of years. That after a shock devaluation of the yuan in 2015 that prompted a surge in money leaving the mainland.
And what everybody's chattering about is perhaps the challenge of the dollar's dominance in oil.
Well, that's the big question. Although most people agree, call it a consensus, that won't happen anytime soon, since paying for oil in dollars is such an entrenched practice that's been around for years. Now, some analysts say it does make sense in the long run to look at transactions in yuan because China is a key market, but they too agree that it's going to take years for the dollar to go away. On the other hand, paying in yuan for oil could become part of Xi Jinping's One Belt, One Road initiative, which we talked about last week, to develop ties across Eurasia, including the Middle East, plus Chinese participation in Saudi Aramco's planned initial public offering later this year could help sway Saudi opinion toward accepting the yuan, which is used in only 2% of global payments. So obviously a lot of questions to be answered. The fact that the future contract was issued today and that market is now open is, some might see it as ho-hum development, others huge. I think it's somewhere in between, under the guise of we shall see.
Yeah, I think this is a big moment to some degree, and I think what's very important is we all know and everyone knows China's penchant for occasional market interventions and so forth. I mean, we talked about the technology, the intellectual technology, how they were able to garner that and so forth. So, either China's going to have to. Basically what I think they're really doing is just positioning themselves to be a world player in this currency, reserve currency status. I never thought it would happen overnight. I didn't think it would happen, but this is, to some degree, it is a big deal for them. And I do think they would probably want to overcome the U.S. dollar. But when you have the dollar, as I said, trading 85-90% of the world transactions are done in the dollar, it's going to have to be a synchronized effort. Just like we've seen these global, we've seen these governments synchronize around the world to push markets to all these levels, stimulus going into these economies. It's all synchronized. And I think you could have also the other side where you could have certain governments synchronized in order to collapse the dollar for whatever reason that might be, and it could very well be war. And we have a lot of challenges facing us. This country and our finances. So don't get caught. And we'll be back tomorrow. Thank you, Dave. And we'll be back tomorrow with Bruce Paul. Until then, stay good night and God bless.
Bye bye.
A single penny left for me. That's too bad.